You're listening to Let's Get Legal, hosted by John Hansen and powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Today's show is sponsored by attorneys John and Andy Larson from Larson Law. Now, here's John Hansen, and let's get legal.
At 210 on WGN. So good to chat with you, everybody. Second hour of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. That's sun breaking on through the clouds and the smoke in the area, too, from the wildfires in Canada. And, boy, that's been the story the last couple of years. Anytime it gets super nice. Anyways, we're going to be continuing our conversation here and just introducing you now to Larson Law, which is a great firm that does great work. And I think they got a great story, too. John is the founder of Larson Law, and Andy is one of the partners as well. And John, this is your daughter, Andy, right?
Yeah, she is my daughter, yes.
And Andy, you work with your dad at the law firm.
I do, yes.
I mean, you're a partner at the law firm. You don't work with him. You're a full partner.
Yeah, she is my partner. She didn't start out that way, but she earned partnership.
That's quite an unusual and awesome story. And I imagine that, of course, dad was the lawyer first and he was the one that inspired you, or did it go the other way, Andy?
It was definitely the other way.
How?
He had been doing business for quite a while before he actually went back to college and then went to law school. So technically I followed his footsteps, but he followed my dreams.
And your dreams started at a young age, huh?
Yes, when I was 9 years old.
And how did you get inspired? When I was 9 years old, I wanted to be on the radio. So I guess it worked out for me. Did you always know you wanted to be a lawyer starting at nine? Why?
So what I can remember is I had to get glasses because my wonderful parents passed down some awful eyesight. And I don't think I was too thrilled about that. Mm-hmm. And either my mom or my dad, I can't remember who, they were trying to convince me that it was cool because, you know, lawyers wear glasses. And I think that's where it just stuck with me. And ever since then, I just wanted to be an attorney.
And here you are doing great work.
Yes.
So, John, you have an interesting bio, one that I think really will resonate with a lot of people. You left high school and didn't immediately go to college and law school like so many lawyers, great lawyers we've had on this program. You took a completely different route, didn't you?
Right. In 1982, I graduated high school. And I went straight into business, opening up a chain of muffler shops, very successful.
Which high school did you go to, around here or no?
TF North in Calumet City, Illinois.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, TF North, Thornton Fractional, yep. North, yes. And from there, I just did business, and then it was so successful, I was able to move Montana and retire, and then I didn't retire, and then got into land development and then hotels, and then decided it was time to go to college so I can become a lawyer.
Yeah, and you were telling me off air that college was just the stepping stone to get to law. You wanted to be a lawyer at that point.
Yeah, I had no desire to go to college. It was begrudgingly to go through the 4 years of college that I went through, but I did because I had to go to law school. And then I went to John Marshall Law School, had a great time there. And then became a lawyer and opened up Larson Law.
Larson Law, for sure. Go
Can
ahead,
I
Andy.
Add something really quick that's also interesting and kind of crazy is that after he got sworn in, literally the day of after he got sworn in, we were walking the streets of Chicago and he had opened up the law firm immediately after.
Well, he was a businessman, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you weren't going to go off and party and celebrate. You had work to do.
Right, and I was not going to work for anybody because that seems silly to me. I wasn't going to make somebody else money when I could do it for myself.
I love that story, and I think that it's important to hear stories like that. First of all, it's also awesome that your daughter's here and that you're here so you guys can hype each other up a little bit. I love that,
right.
By the way. That's good. We don't usually get that here on the program. But I think that there's this narrative, and I think it's slowly changed, that if you want to be a lawyer, you do it right out of college, and then you get into the trial, and you just start working, you start grinding at it. But more and more people I've talked to have gone to law school at night, have chosen it as a second or a third career, and I think that that wealth of other experience you garnered and other lawyers garnered from years of doing practical work, whatever that may be, they then bring that to their firm.
That is absolutely 100% true. In fact, I would say that's what makes me so different than other lawyers, even from Andy, that she didn't have all those, she had some experience, but not as much in the real world. And I think that real world experience, I've learned at an early age never to accept a certain answer that somebody gives me. I think outside the box, where in law school, they try to teach you to think inside that box. So I come up and, you know, I just think that any case is winnable simply because there's always a way to get around things.
I was just going to say, so you probably take on cases that maybe other lawyers would say, meh, I'm not going to touch that.
Yes, exactly. I do that all the time, but opioids are a big one. A lot of lawyers don't want to take opioid cases against doctors that over-prescribe, and we did, and it's a little niche that we found, and it's a big part of our business.
Why don't they want to take them?
It's hard because a lot of people that die from the opioids, it seems like it's self-inflicted, right? People had misused the opioids. not understanding that it's because they are addicted. They got addicted because the doctor had prescribed too many opioids, which is why they're addicted. They've been taking them for years, and now they can't stop taking them, and now they're actually abusing them. But that's because the chemicals in your brain change, and you have this craving for these opioids.
Yeah.
So it's not their fault. So if somebody does die from an opioid, chances are it's not their fault. It's how they got addicted to it.
As you were finding that this might be an area that you could practice with Larson Law, simultaneously, Andy, you were taking a class or some sort of experience you had with the opioid litigation as well, right, at the same time?
Yeah, so I was at Stetson Law School, and I was doing a mock trial. So it's a fake trial that they do for students to kind of give you experience. And our case file was actually on an opioid death. So that was right when my dad started taking on the opioid cases. And I was kind of like a God's train moment, you know?
Right.
It was very cool to get to learn about that through Stetson Law, which is the number one trial school, and then kind of help him with him taking on the opioid cases.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like, yeah, it was like fate decided that you guys would do this. And I do think that that stigma is going, it's not going away, Andy, but I feel like it's lessened. And I feel like you guys are here at a great time with Larson Law, because as we start to learn more about what creates the opioid crisis, what causes people to go down these roads that are just so difficult to get out of, it is nice to know now that there is someone on the litigation side who can stand up for people like that have gone through this.
Right.
Absolutely.
A lot of people feel that they were left out in, you know, when the states were suing the big pharmaceutical companies, they feel that they were left out. I get calls like that all the time. And those cases are gone. But their kids are, or their family members are still suffering from this, and they want to know where they can go to. Well, you go to where it was where it was prescribed, and that's straight to the doctor or the hospital where it was prescribed from.
Mm-hmm. Are most of your clients like family members of someone that has passed, or could it be someone that has gone through recovery and just had years of their life stripped away? How does it normally work?
Well, the way the courts work, to get any kind of justice, you have to have damages. And unfortunately, most of our cases, it's because the family member died. And so the family is suing on behalf of the estate, and those are the cases we have. At least 95% of those are.
Yeah. Andy, I imagine family members might be reluctant to call, right? Maybe there's a sense of embarrassment or shame, not that there should be. Do you chat with them about kind of that aspect of things, the emotional aspect?
Absolutely. So, you know, that's a great point. Back to when we were talking about the stigma, I think family members also feel that and think, oh, well, you know, my son or my daughter or my husband, wife, whoever it is, was just addicted. And people automatically think it's that person's fault. They feel embarrassed, and I chat with them. I talk them through it and let them know, you know, we trust doctors. We all do. They're the ones who wear the white coats. They're the ones who are trying to help us with our health. So you're taking their advice, and then you get addicted to these drugs, and then the doctors just keeps prescribing it, and then you're no longer in the right mental state to be making, you know, these sound decisions. And unfortunately, a lot of people end up passing away from that.
Right. I think it's got to be that emotional mess that families are trying to unravel. And I think, generally speaking, most people do not think of themselves as overly litigious, right? We often think, oh, our whole society, we're overly litigious. But when you talk to average folks, they say, I don't want to, really, do I really want to go after this? But they are, and this, we get this a lot on trying to help people along on the radio, is that it may seem like, oh my gosh, you're settling a case, winning $1 million for a family. And that might seem some insane number for having lost someone due to opioids, but it's not.
No.
This is what these families deserve.
Right. Now, I mean, there's even something going around on the internet that where somebody offers somebody $10 million. And the three panel, every one of them accepts the $10 million. And he says, there's one caveat. You can't wake up tomorrow. Okay. That's how do you value life?
Exactly.
Well, we all know that I would not take $10 million if we couldn't wake up tomorrow. And sadly, their family is not going to wake up tomorrow. And there is no amount of money that I could win at a trial or a settlement that's going to return that. But they do feel heard. They do feel that justice was served. And they feel that that doctor, and there's a lot of great doctors. I'm not picking on doctors here. And I don't mean to come out that way. But they feel that that doctor is now going to be held accountable and get in trouble, maybe lose his license because of what we do.
What is the harm or what's the law that's broken? Like a lot of doctors will prescribe some of these, I don't want to say low-level opioids, but commonly used opioids after a back surgery, after something.
Right.
At what point do you guys say this went too far on the part of the doctor? Do you kind of see what I'm asking here?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so one of the things we do is we look at it's called the Illinois Prescription Monitoring Report. And what it is, it's a database in just about every state, but here in Illinois, every doctor that prescribes opioids, it gets submitted to that. So when a doctor first sees a patient, he gets to look at that report, and he knows right away, has this person been pill shopping? In other words, have they seen five doctors, and now they're coming to me? That's a big red flag. That doctor should say, I'm sorry, we need to get you into rehab. We need to get you some more pills.
I want to make sure I understand this. The doctor, he or she, can see if someone has sought opioids from other doctors in the recent past?
Yes, they can go very far back.
Okay, and they can go further back to see if this is a history of someone who is, oh, my back hurts, I need something, if it's someone that is clearly maybe has an issue and is abusing this.
By that time, they're addicted, and that's why they're pill shopping. So, because most doctors realize that when they give something for back surgery, they know it's not a long-term solution. You know, you give them a 30-day supply, maybe a 60-day supply, maybe even a 90-day supply. Anything over that, there's something else wrong with them. So if they're pill shopping, though, that's when the doctor's got to say no. And if he doesn't, they continue, and this person then dies, that's, you know.
Well, there's also another aspect of that is when you're looking at this report, the Illinois Prescription Monitoring Report, it shows benzodiazepines as well. So that's, you know, Xanax, Klonopin, and that in combination with opioids is also a dangerous mix.
Yes.
So when you're looking at that and you see somebody who's being prescribed benzos, it's usually for anxiety, depression, or something, you know, of that sort. So you don't want to be prescribing another highly addictive drug to somebody who's already, you know, in a depressed state of mind. So it's a powerful tool to use. It's just a lot of doctors either don't use it or just don't care when they're looking at it.
So you're not necessarily going after the doctor who made that very legitimate prescription for 30 days after a surgery or something. You're going and saying, this was the seventh doctor this person went to. This doctor had at their tools, in their tools chest, an opportunity to look at this and make the judgment call that, hey, this is not the prescription to write, but this doctor did it anyways.
Correct. There's plenty of warning signs that doctors have that they can tell if somebody's pill shopping, and they should put an end to it right away, you know, because otherwise bad things happen.
And when we started talking, I wondered, is there a potential harm for litigating against doctors who then are more apprehensive to prescribe drugs that they should be prescribing to help people get through these pains? But I think it's the opposite. I think what you are maybe doing is, Andy, is you're making more doctors feel the pressure that they should feel to check this registry to make sure that they are making responsible choices with their prescriptions.
Absolutely. And, you know, kind of communicating with other healthcare providers. So if somebody was seeing a different doctor for back pain and now they're coming to you, you need to reach out to that other doctor and see what the, you know, cause of the pain was and see if it's still appropriate to continue prescribing the opioids, not do it simultaneously with that other doctor, which is another problem that we see.
Well, and I think that this is why sometimes personal injury gets a bad rap from the, I'm not going to name any names, but the billboards and some of the other things that are out there. But I often try and remind people that personal injury lawyers are often, we call journalism like the fourth estate, right? Like reporting on the government and making sure that the government is held accountable. I think sometimes personal injury lawyers are the fifth estate. They're the ones making sure corporations or people that have the power to do certain things don't overstep that power and abuse that power. Would you agree, John?
I would absolutely agree. You know, and personal injury lawyers, we are personal injury lawyers also. And I would definitely state that both in personal injury and in opioids, it's just holding certain individuals accountable for their actions and nothing else. Again, like I said earlier, I'm not picking on doctors, but I would think even the doctors would appreciate what I'm doing, which is getting out the bad apples. Same in my business. If you can take lawyers that are bad apples, probably more of them.
than doctors?
Just kidding to my lawyer friends.
Yeah,
get them out of the system. You don't want them in the system. And that's in your business, my business, anybody's business. You want the bad actors out.
We're chatting with John and Andy Larson from Larson Law. Let's give people the website and the phone number. What do you want people to reach you,
by the way? Larson.law.
Mm-hmm. That's easy.
Larson.law. And it's 312-585-5554.
We'll be saying that number and the address a few more times before we wrap on up. We're going to have you guys here the whole hour. Andy, I just feel like some people maybe would be hesitant to call because they think, oh, I'm going to be lumped together. Like they hear the Sackler lawsuits and they're like, oh, I'm just going to be one cog in a class action wheelhouse. That's not what you do, right?
No, it's not. And I tell my dad this a lot. I get so emotionally attached to these cases because we do spend so much time speaking with the family members and really making sure we take the time on each case and not just lumping them all together.
They're individual cases, right? At the end of the day.
Right. Mm-hmm. Families are different. And I'll tell you, talking to a grieving family, it's tough. She takes it very hard, more so than I do, because she's into the medical records much more than I am. And we're both talking to the families. And it's tough. You get to know these families for the 3 or 4 or 5 years that it takes to get the trial.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're like your family, and you feel for them. You know who their decedent is, and you know more about them, and it's tough.
The opioid crisis, in the last couple of years, thankfully, the numbers have gone slightly down.
Yeah.
But we're still astronomically higher than we were before the pandemic, which obviously has messed with a lot of people as well. Just some insane stat I saw that in 2022 alone, here in the United States, opioid overdoses erased 3.1 million years of life. That's not 3.1 million people, but that's if you add up all the years of life that they would have lived out in the United States had it not been for an opioid addiction. 3.1 million cumulative years of life. I mean, we could list any of these stats, and it's staggering, John.
Right. It's insane. And that's why something needs to be done about it. And that's also, you know, proves that the lawsuits against the pharmaceutical companies alone did not work. It didn't really hamper the problem at all. Because if you still have the doctor prescribing them negligently, it's going to be a problem.
Well, right. Going after the pharmaceutical company, amen, and that, you know, power to them for a lot of different things in this that you could read about the Sackler family and all that happened there. We don't have time on this show to go through it. But the effect has already been made. The drugs are already there. They're already there to be populated by doctors. So now it's about going down the chain and finding out who else is wrong in these situations and should be held accountable. We got to take a break, and then we got the news coming up. Just in case someone's leaving the car, Larson Law, larson.law, you do this opioid stuff. In 20 seconds, give an elevator pitch for anything else you do, John, that you
we
want people to call.
We do personal injury and contract law. We have different lawyers than just me and Andy. So
yeah, you do a lot of things. Andy, save a good embarrassing story about your father. I'll let you think about it. We're chatting with the folks from Larson Law, John and Andy, a father-daughter duo, partners in trying to help people in a lot of different ways, but especially folks that have unfortunately lost someone that they love due to opioid. We'll dive into this deeper in the next half hour. We'll take your questions too, 312-981-7200 if you have them. We had someone call in that didn't want to talk on the air, but just saying it's nice to have someone like you guys who can start to finish guide people through what is a horrific situation, and people that didn't know maybe that there was legal help that they could have after what happened to a loved one. And John, before we hit the news break, you said something really important about the timing of this, right?
There is only in Illinois a statute of limitations of 2 years. So if somebody died, let's say 5 years ago, there is absolutely no recourse. So if you do know somebody that's someone that loved, or even you know somebody that died from an opioid overdose, call us. Let us do the homework. Let us do the investigation, and we'll get back to you.
What's the number again?
312-585-5554.
John Hansen here. This show is called Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We do it Saturday afternoons, 1 to 3 p.m., and we're in a good run here already in 1-3, 1-3 in the summer. When we get to the fall of Northwestern football, we bounce around a little bit. Same with the Blackhawks. So we're enjoying our steady 1-3 p.m. here Saturday afternoons. Really interesting guest in a field we have not talked about in the 4 years this show has been on the air, and that's litigation after, in most cases, a death of a loved one due to opioid addiction. And Larson Law are the people, the father-daughter duo, that handle this. And John and Andy, they're our guests here today. And I mean, you guys really are. I mean, there's a couple other people that may have done this, a case or two, or an opioid litigation, but you guys really are the ones that do this here, right?
I only know of two other law firms that have done cases like this. But as far as many as we have done, yes, there's nobody else out there that's doing what we're doing.
Why not? Is it just a hard area to do?
Well, think about it. It's tough. When somebody loses a loved one to opioids, a lot of people just jump to the conclusion that he had a drug problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's his fault. Well, no, it's not his fault. People get addicted because the doctor overprescribed, and the addiction itself is what causes the problem. So whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a doctor, whether you're just somebody on the street or a middle-class person, you're going to get addicted. And that's not your fault. That you're not the one that got these drugs. They got the drugs. Usually that they start with the drugs because they suffered some sort of injury or back pain.
Got a legit prescription for something.
Very legit prescription, but they kept on playing the system, or the doctors didn't notice all the red flags, or there are bad doctors that just keep on prescribing many, many, many pills. I have horror stories I can share with you, and it's sad. But unfortunately, the families think it was because it was that person's fault or that person's weakness. They were weak. They couldn't handle it. And that's not it at all. You can get addicted. I can addict it. If somebody's giving you that many opioids or benzodiazepines, you're going to get addicted. And it's gonna end bad.
Yeah. Andy, we were kind of chatting off the air about, you know, and getting questions on the text line. Well, why aren't these doctors arrested? that's not your area here. You guys are civil litigation, right?
Correct.
That you're not the attorney general. But what happens after a doctor maybe settles one of these cases?
Yeah. So if a doctor settles or we reach a verdict at trial, the doctor does get a ding. And they get investigated and they're kind of on a probation period.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully with that being done, the doctors are more mindful when they're prescribing pills, and moving forward, they'll start to follow the guidelines that were given to them more strictly.
So I just want to make sure that you were talking about kind of the database, which I know when it comes to medicine and databases, everyone kind of gets their big brother ears on up. But this is a database here in Illinois that kind of just tracks how often a patient goes in to try and get opioid prescriptions, right?
So it's every time that a prescription is written, a doctor has to fill out whatever database it is, and they put in the prescription, the quantity, the days that it's supplied for, and then it gives you everything.
And this is not accessible to everyone else. This is for doctors. I just don't want people to be freaked out. Yes.
Just for doctors. And so they had the opportunity to look at a prescription that was prescribed as early as 2 days prior, and then as far back as, I don't know, 20 years. So they're able to see the history of a patient with the click of a button.
Are there just a lot of doctors that just don't click that button then?
No, they do. I mean, as of, 2018, there's an act in place where they actually have to check it. So they are checking it, and I'm not
befuddled
sure
as to why.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's the harm you guys are identifying, is that, like, we do this with litigation with big companies. I was talking to you guys about Vogelzang, which is another one of our clients. The standard of proof is you have to show that one of these companies known or should have known that this could be damaging. Is it the same thing with doctors, that you have to prove that maybe not that the doctor was nefarious or had ill intent in prescribing this,
right,
but that they should have known that this was a problem? Is that the standard you guys have
that
to reach in
the
case?
And except for one case, there was never been ill intent. But unfortunately, you know, we can't give a free pass on something like this. If you see all the red flags, because you will if you pull up the Illinois Prescription Monitoring Report, and you choose to ignore those many, many red flags, you're negligently prescribing drugs at that point.
Right. And there needs to be consequences.
Absolutely.
And do most of your cases end up getting settled, or do they often go to trial? I mean,
they mostly get settled, yes.
Is this because, I imagine, doctors don't want this information out them about themselves? Is this public? Is this private? How does this work?
Well, once they do settle, they still have to go before a board and explain themselves. So it doesn't go away for them, but they're not going to lose their license, most likely. At least not on the first go-round. So the insurance companies usually take over, and they pay on behalf of the doctors. So the doctors aren't really financially out.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to get a ding on their record.
When something gets settled like this in civil litigation, Andy, is it private information? Or is there a database I can search to find out who your defendants are? That may be something people are asking. Like, I want to make sure I don't ever have a doctor like this. I don't know.
There is a there's a website you can go to where you can look up doctors to see if they have any dings.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, as far as like settlements go, that's usually confidential.
Confidential stuff.
Mm-hmm.
312-981-7020 is our phone number. Where can people reach you guys at, by the way?
312-585-5554, or go to our website at larson.law, LARSON.law.
You hear how it goes into his radio voice, Andy? Was one of your previous jobs a radio announcer?
No.
You read that phone number so well. Give it to me one more time.
312-585-5554.
All right, Andy, I gave you some time to think. Do you got any embarrassing stories about your dad you can share on the radio, or are they all for off air?
You know, it's going to sound like I'm getting a bonus for saying this or getting paid a little extra. I don't have any embarrassing stories about him. I feel like, not to sound corny, but I feel like I've always looked up to him, and he's just always carried himself with such confidence and grace that I honestly can't even think of an embarrassing story.
How much did you pay her for that?
that cost me a lot of
during
money.
During Sylvia's news break,
is six figures worth of testament.
I gotta ask, just as a dad, it must be so, you fill you with such pride to not only work with your daughter closely, to be a partner with your daughter. And I saw it when you looked over her and talked about how she talks to the clients and the empathy that she shows to these families. That must fill you with just an immense joy that can't even be described.
I could not be more proud. The work that she does, first off, I had a client once that said, "Hey, John, you're going to go on this hearing, right?" It was for some kind of motion. And I said, "No, Andy's going to go." He goes, "But I want you to go." I said, "You don't understand. Andy knows this case better than I do as far as the details, because her memory is crazy good. I mean, she could remember every medical record. She'll be in a deposition with a doctor And she'll know the doctor's case better than the doctor knows. So yeah, I'm absolutely incredibly proud of her. The person that she is just great. And the fact that she empathizes and understands what the families are going through, that helps the families deal with what they're going through in this time. So
how many sorts of cases like this have you guys tackled at Larson Law?
A little over 30 on these.
Yeah. And
we've looked way more than we've turned down a lot of cases too. So I say that's what we've taken on, but there's hundreds upon hundreds of cases we've gone through. We've done the work because as I said off air, we have to go see a medical expert and a medical expert sign off on a case that is a meritorious case before we get into the court. We can't just file. There has to be a doctor that says, yes, another doctor made a mistake.
Andy, I mentioned one of the hurdles that families face, as you talked about some, the stigma about opioid overdoses. But I imagine also there's probably, especially if it was a loved one that maybe left the home for a while, which obviously happens in these cases, or had been out of the home for a while, that maybe the family doesn't even know how it got started or how it accelerated.
Right.
And so litigation doesn't enter their mind as a possibility because they think it was something that happened on the streets, not something that happened in a doctor's office.
Right.
Do you feel like anyone that has lost someone to an opioid overaddiction should at the very least give you guys a call so that you can kind of reverse engineer what may have happened? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think, so just to kind of walk you through it, we look at a death certificate, and usually that'll come with an autopsy as well. And it kind of breaks down what was in their system. And if drugs were in their system, that allows us to then order medical records, the Illinois Prescription Monitoring Report, and kind of, like you said, reverse engine it back and see if doctors were negligently prescribing.
Yeah. But you guys as lawyers have the power to get that information, right?
Yes.
And I think that's where that must be hard, though. You guys know how to do it. What I mean is, are family members often surprised to find out what was going on with their family members?
Yes. I don't think I've met one family member who knew that it was a doctor overprescribing. They always thought it, you know, was their loved one who had just an addiction problem.
Mm-hmm.
Or to the extent of it. I think that is the big one, too. The families find out how bad it was and how long this has been going on.
And I guess, Andy, that's where, you both play a role in this, too, but this is a real journey you go on with families because they've taken the step to call you, to reach out on some of their darkest days. And they, as you said, John, before the news, two years from the date of death is the statute of limitations.
Right.
So they're calling you at a very raw time. And then throughout this investigation, they have to sort of relive some of the pain or discover new things about it. And that's not to dissuade anyone from calling you guys to do it, but that is something I imagine has to be dealt with a delicate touch.
Absolutely. But with that, I also think it gives them peace of mind in a sense of that they're not looking at their loved one's passing as more of like an addiction issue. They know that somebody's being held responsible for it, that it wasn't just they got addicted or they were out on the streets doing this. It was a legitimate problem that a doctor caused.
It wasn't weakness.
Right.
Right.
It was something wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
And that fact alone helps the families a lot to know that it wasn't because there was something wrong with their child or their mom or dad or sibling, you know, that it was a doctor that created a problem.
I also feel like you said that you haven't been able to take every case. Of course, you have to meet certain standards and take a look at the case. And sometimes it isn't a doctor overprescribed opioids, right? There are all sorts of forms of this addiction.
Well, yeah. One of the big ones that we turn away is if somebody is presently addicted, they might call me up. And unfortunately, I have to say, the problem is you're alive. I need you to go to a rehab now and let's stop the problem.
In fact, let's stop this so that your family doesn't call me.
Right.
Ever.
But the fact is, to get a case from the day that I'm called to the day we walk into trial, we're spending over $100,000 from our law firm for that case.
Right.
So if there's not enough damages, you know, like an addiction case where somebody could go just get rehab, I can't take that case because I'm not going to be able to pay back even the $100,000.
Right. But I think that even a family that has lost someone to just kind of have that, to at least know, right?
Right.
To at least call you and have you talk them through it and they learn a thing or two. Maybe they at least understand, hey, this happened. We may not have a case here, but we can close that book, close that chapter.
Right, and we've done that where people get a certain sense of closure because we have figured out what it is and we've shared that with them and they do get that closure.
Okay, Larson Law, larson.law. I like that as the website. Phone number one more time, John.
312-585-5554.
We should have a phone reading read off here between Andy and Andy, do you have the number memorized too?
I don't. Okay. I know. And now I'm sweating.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm not going to put you on the spot. You have the commercial break to come up with it. We'll have more. And your questions too. 312-981-7200. Getting a few on the text line. More with John and Andy from Larson Law after this on WGN. WGN and Shipshawana Indiana Visitors Center invite you to try a one-tank trip summer getaway at Shipshawana, Indiana, Amish country. Enter for a chance to win an overnight stay for two at the Blue Gate Garden Inn, tickets to a production from the Blue Gate Musical Theater, lunch or dinner at the Blue Gate Restaurant. A lot of Blue Gate in there. And oh, an audio driving tour plus a lot more goodies. The summer, get off the beaten path with a road trip to Shipshawana. To enter, win the contest page or visit the contest page at WGNradio.com. Shipshawana, gorgeous in the summer, I'm sure. I went there in the winter when they did their big lights festival, too. Four seasons in Shipshawana. Great stuff there. Larson Law here in the studio for just a couple more minutes before we wrap things up here on Let's Get Legal. It's made up of a duo of John and Andy, Father John, daughter Andy, and you guys work together and you do other things besides opioid overdoses. But boy, you guys are the ones that do this, and you do it very well. As you just said, John, before the break, you don't take every case. There's a lot that you have to invest in every case to get it to get it even to a settlement or a trial. So you make sure you chat with people about whether they got a good case or not. But when you do take a case on, you too, you've either won or settled every single one?
Yes, we've never lost a case or not settled a case.
That's insane.
Well, because these cases are pretty ironclad. The facts are on our side. The doctors did what they did. They ignored the warning signs, and they know that.
And do you think you guys are, is the word out to doctors, you got to stop this behavior because there's a firm that is going after people who die from opioid overdoses, or has it not reached that point yet, but hopefully it will soon?
I unfortunately don't think it's reached that point yet, considering we still have cases, but I'm hoping that it does reach that point.
Right. I mean, I don't want to put you guys out of business, but what a glorious point we'd be at in our society if people were not calling you for this, John.
That would be excellent if we never had this problem again. We do other stuff. We do the personal injury and the contract law. But yeah, I would be perfectly happy if we could end this problem. If doctors got word that this was happening and they started watching the red flags, I'd be a very happy person.
Is this the most emotional of the cases you kind of deal with?
Absolutely, 100%, because you're dealing with somebody's loss, their death of their loved one. And it's, whether it's a mom or a dad or a sibling or, in a lot of cases, a son or a daughter, we've had them all. It's very sad. The people that are grieving, they're sharing with us their experiences. They're telling how their child grew up or how they grew up in their parents' home. And it's sad to know this person passed, because I always can relate, and so can Andy, to the people that are no longer with us.
Yeah. There's no scale of one death is harder to deal with than others. Of course not. And people will react to different deaths in their families in different ways. But Andy, the people I've talked to that have lost someone due to opioid addiction, they are harrowing years-long tales of loss, many different kinds of losses. Parents who have tried so hard to have their kids still live in their home. The problems have escalated so much that they've had to make the unthinkable decision to them that they can't have them in their home anymore. Mm-hmm. Yet they still keep an eye on them. They invite them home for Christmas. They try, they beg, they plead, they do everything they can in a battle that is often lost. And these families deserve something.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Especially, and if it is someone who is writing an insane amount of prescription pills, a doctor who knows that their patient has been through many different bottles of this stuff over many different years, I mean, it is criminal in my mind. Not that you guys handle the criminal side of it, but John, it just feels like it's an abomination.
It is, and it seems like it's criminal. Unfortunately, there's nothing I can do on that side of it, but that is the very sad part, is they're going through torture. The families themselves are going through torture, watching this happen to their loved one. Nothing they can do. Sometimes, in some of our cases, they've known it. They've tried to stop it. They've actually gone to the doctors and said, stop it. And the doctors still don't stop it. In every case that we've had that a family member has gone to a doctor, the doctor has not stopped.
Wait. This is after doctors have been told by family members, you are killing my son's husband, whatever it
every
is.
Every single one so far, yes.
In some cases, they'll even increase the prescriptions after having a family member come in.
Okay, well, That makes me feel a certain kind of way, and it's not good. I want to read this text from the 815 because I do think it's important to note. I'm 65 years old. I personally know many people who've had back injuries, surgeries, and been taking opioid prescriptions for decades. They lead productive and responsible lives. They just have constant pain. Yes, there are people out there, of course, that have had prescription medication, have had opioids, who live productive and responsible lives. We're not saying that every single person that gets prescribed an opioid is going to run down a path that leads to death. Right.
Right. And I never wanted to insinuate that, but I will state that opioids are not something that somebody should be taking as a lifelong drug. It's not meant to be a lifelong drug. And I guarantee you that that person that's taken that opioid is now taking it more as an addiction, and the pain is still there. It's not because here's what happens, John, is once you, let's say you get a 10 milligram tab of something, of some kind of opioid, well, then you need a 20, then you need a 30, or, you know,
it goes
so
up.
On and so forth. You have to keep on getting more because there's a certain point where you don't fight the pain anymore. And you can't do that. Otherwise, you'll die. So they stay on this addiction that they have, and they live normal lives, but they still have the pain. So it's just, you're just dealing with addiction.
They're functioning at that point.
Right, but they're addicted at that point.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Okay, I've learned a lot today. I think a lot of people have, maybe, that didn't understand all of this or get how it works. The only litigation I thought that was available were these big class action lawsuits against pharmaceutical companies, and I thought most of those were gone, and they might be. But what you guys are doing is taking it to a different level. And anyone in our area who has lost someone due to opioid addiction, it doesn't hurt to call. It doesn't cost anything to call,
no,
does it?
No, everything's free from day one to the end of trial. Everything's free. We don't ever charge anybody.
Larson.law. John, give the number one more time.
312-585-5554.
Andy, did you memorize it yet or no?
No.
One more time, John.
312-585-5554.
Larson.law. Andy, good to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
John, you too.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on the show. We appreciate you and WGN.
Come back again. We got to talk more.
We will. Thank you.